You know that feeling when your day finally slows down and you just want to relax, unplug, and feel good? That's where Mood.com comes in. They're changing the game, delivering legal THC products right to your door, no shady dealers, and absolutely no medical card required, just good vibes and better sleep, shipped straight from their farm to your couch. From delicious THC gummies, smooth vape pens, to premium THC flower, Mood has it all. And everything's federally legal under the 2018 Farm Bill. Yeah, this isn't some loophole. It's the real deal. Head to Mood.com and use code FIRST20 for 20% off your first order. That's MOOD.com. Find your mood.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lore cast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect lore cast. I'm In7 the Legend.
And I'm Genesis. Join us
as we explore along tides of light
and through shoals of dust
to see where this lore began
and consider where it may go.
Spectres, welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I am your host, In7 the Legend, and joining me as always is the wonderful, newly rejuvenated Genesis from some awesome conversations that you had at Portland Retro Gaming Expo.
Yes, I had really, really great conversations with like five different voice actors and had an amazing time doing my panels.
Yeah. And are those online anywhere? Can people go and see those?
They are not yet, but as soon as they are, I'm sure that we will link them and post them on the socials because they were pretty fun and interesting.
Yes. Yes, they were. You got to actually talk with a couple of voice actors from Mass Effect.
I did. I also got to watch a panel between Peter Jessup, who voiced Paladin Dance in Fallout 4 and Sovereign in Mass Effect, alongside Katie Townsend, who is the voice of Kate in Fallout 4 and Suvi in Mass Effect Andromeda. And their panel was BioWare versus Bethesda and how it was working for those two separate development studios.
That's, oh, what a tough choice that would have to be for me to choose between.
And it was hosted by our good friend Yuri Cat.
Really? Wow. Okay. So I'm definitely going to have to go and check out those videos. But today we have our final episode covering Paul Grayson's story. And Genesis, we left off at the point where Grayson kills the Turian soldiers who rescued him aboard the Cerberus station, and then they're on the shuttle, and it's, I have to mention that it's not really Grayson acting, it's the Reapers controlling Grayson's body. So he's almost fully under Reaper control in that moment. And he kills two Turian soldiers who are trying to rescue him. And he assassinates them literally mid-flight. And then the Reapers had him take control of the shuttle and redirect it. Where was it going?
That's a very interesting question. Because originally, the Turians were headed back to the Citadel to meet back up with Anderson and Kaylee, who had helped to orchestrate this multi-pronged attack on Cerberus. Now, the Reaper forces Grayson... The Reapers then force Grayson to send a distress call to Kaylee. And they were pulling on his memories and his feelings towards her. Grayson has no memory of sending this message. They knocked him out in order to do this. And the next time that he wakes up, he gains partial control of his body and basically programs the ship to the middle of nowhere.
So wait. When you say partial control of his body, what do you mean? Like he's struggling to move his limbs?
It's more like he has control, but knows that they are right there in order if they wanted to take over control again.
That's a terrifying, lingering thought. Like, just a sword of Damocles hanging above your head at all moments, knowing full well that at any given moment it could come down and you'll lose all control again, and who knows what the hell you'll do. So I guess it makes sense that he's like, I'm going to try and get this ship, like, literally so far from everything that it won't matter, maybe, if they take control.
Yeah, because he wants to take himself out of the picture. And he also tries to do that. But the Reapers won't let him. And so even trying the unaliving route, they stop him each and every time.
So just to be clear, he tries to kill himself multiple times. And the yes. Reapers take control of him physically to not allow him to do that.
Yeah. One was he tried on his arm. And then he learned that the healing factor was too great in order to do that. And the other, he was going to go straight on the jugular to make it as fast as possible. But they physically stopped his hand. He couldn't bring the knife to his own throat.
Wow, that's probably the darkest thing in Mass Effect that I think I've ever heard.
It's definitely up there. I think that there was one mission in Mass Effect 1 that's also really, really dark.
Dr. Salian, is that who you're talking about?
No, it's the... you have to have like a really high Paragon score, or it's one of the background missions where this woman has been like
Talitha.
Battered. Yeah.
I think that's her name. Talitha, right? She's the one who escaped Batarian slavery.
Mm-hmm. Because that one's also really dark and messed up.
Yeah, especially if you're a renegade in that one. Oh my God. That is like the most effed up thing. That, like, if you actually like playing Renegade in that specific quest, like, I worry for you. There are free counseling services available online, and I encourage you to take it.
I have never gone Renegade on that mission. Never, ever. But yeah, Grayson, he wants to take himself out of the picture and off of the playing board in any way possible, so that way the Reapers can't use him to cause even more damage. And so he's like, if I can't end me, I'm going to send us to the middle of nowhere.
I guess the best possible solution for him at that moment. So how does that work out for him? Or are we jumping too far ahead?
Well, yeah, unfortunately, that doesn't happen. He's able to program the ship, but then Caleb's beginning to get worried about Grayson, and the Turian ambassador Arena is concerned that her people haven't checked in since the raid. All the other ships that they sent out have checked in, but this specific one hasn't, and they knew that this was the target that also had Grayson. So through several moving pieces and a band of Omega Mercs, Anderson and Kaylee are forced onto Omega. There's a lot of storyline that we're skipping over.
Yeah, exactly. There's a ton of storyline here, but Grayson isn't involved in that part of it. The important part, though, is that meanwhile, while the Turians are kind of playing catch up about like what happened to their soldiers, Kaylee and Anderson pretty much know what happened, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or at least they believe what's happened, and they want to go and find out and check what's going on. But they were also met on the ship that Grayson was originally on by forces from Omega, because Arya followed the exact same clues and got to the same location.
And
Haley,
I'm sorry, just to paint the scene here. This is after the elusive man had already approached Arya and claimed that Grayson was the one that killed Lysel, right?
Yes.
And when yes. In actuality, it was Kai Lang. It was not Grayson. But the elusive man knows that he can kind of manipulate Arya into pursuing Grayson and trying to help recapture him or kill him or eliminate him in some way, if I'm remembering right, by basically blaming her daughter's death on him.
Right. So the elusive man is trying to convince Arya to kill Grayson for him, so that way he doesn't have to expend any more resources on it, because he's running scared. Now, back on Omega, Kaylee is strongly convinced by Arya to send a response message to Grayson saying that Kaylee is in trouble on Omega and needs help. Now, when Grayson wakes up again, he sees the message and has no idea that he sent the original message to her. And he's truly torn on this decision. He wants to help Kaylee, but knows that going to Omega is dangerous for everyone involved.
So, sorry to jump in. This sounds like basically just the classic superhero dilemma of, you know, the girl you love, right? And like, it does, I don't want to go too far in that analogy, because in the books, it does kind of like draw a line for Grayson that, like, he acknowledges Kaylee is attractive, but they have kept it platonic at pretty much all times.
Yeah, absolutely. It's very much like a, you loved my daughter, that puts, it's kind of like a sister relationship almost, or a best friend, a really person, a good person that you care about. It hasn't gotten anywhere romantic between them.
Not that Anderson isn't insecure about that, but that's a topic for another day.
Yeah. All right. So, Grayson at this point is almost fully under Reaper control and is a danger to everyone. But he cares deeply for Kaylee and wants to help the one person who has helped him in the past. The Reapers pull on that. They pull on the desire and also learn how important Kaylee is and who she is to the Ascension Project.
I don't know about you, but I actually tend to be a fan of when people pull on my desire. No, so this is like, all jokes aside, this is really critical lore for the interim between Mass Effect 2 and 3, where the Reapers are, we get like an inside granular look at how the Reapers go about their business of learning who the biggest targets in the galaxy are. And this is one of the ways that they do it, and look at everything that they can learn just from indoctrinating the right person. And so you have to think, when the elusive man was exacting revenge or vengeance on Paul, was it just his motivation? Or were the Reapers also kind of manipulating the strings there, because they knew that, since the Reapers had already indoctrinated the elusive man at this point, they knew that Paul knew something greater, had greater connection to knowledge they wanted than the elusive man did. Because the elusive man was never on board the Grissom Academy. He was never there, but Paul was. The elusive man never came in direct contact with Kaylee, but Paul did. The elusive man never went on board the migrant fleet, but Paul did.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Because now that you're saying that, like, obviously the Reapers would have known about the Ascension Project as like a thing because the elusive man knows about it. But the level of detail that Paul has is a lot, way more. And then through Paul, they learn about Kaylee. And now Kaylee is a target. Because now the Reapers want to learn more about these human biotic children. And they make him plot the course to Omega. And make Grayson feel relieved that he's going to help Kaylee. Because he was torn about the decision.
That's so twisted. Like, so basically, they're so deep in Grayson's mind right now that they circumvented his resistance to playing into their hand. They basically, like, he was resisting going to help Kaylee because he knows that the Reapers are within his head, and he knows what will likely happen to Kaylee. And yet, he lets go. And they go to Omega, and now we get Grayson's mind not just not resisting the Reapers, but feeling relief. The same kind of relief that Grayson felt when he would dust up, when he would do a hit of red sand.
The numbness, the let everything else fade away and let me just be in this haze. And
isn't it nice not to worry right now? That kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. The sense of relief that we're going to go help Kaylee. And that's his focus. There is another side to this, though, because, as always, stupid freaking Kai Lang is following the same leads that Arya did to find where Grayson went, to figure out what happened after he and the elusive man fled. And so his stupid ass shows up on Omega to intercept. But his plans fail, and that makes me happy. But so do Arya's. Their plans also fail. Now, Reaperson is able to deftly take out all combatants.
Now, you just combined Reapers and Grayson. Reaperson. Yes. Paul Reaperson.
Okay. No, it's not Paul Johnson. It's not, Paul Reaperson.
No more Mr. Paul Johnson. It's Paul Reaperson to you now.
Yep. Now, the Reapers are upset that the host has taken some damage and are even more interested in the human children and Kaylee.
Had to be the children.
Oh, yeah. It has to be the biotic children. We need to learn everything that we can about these kids.
And, you know, I think the other thing that this proves here, and I guess it doesn't prove, but it just lends further evidence toward the theme in Mass Effect 2 and 3 that the Reapers were uniquely threatened by humanity. That they had not been threatened by other races in previous cycles like that before. And we get a little bit of that when we're talking to Morden about the genophage, and he talks to us about the unique, extreme biodiversity, comparative biodiversity of within the human species that other alien races don't have. We hear that same refrain later when we are learning about the human reaper and why the collectors are trying to make a human reaper as opposed to another kind. Basically, it's a little bit of hand-wavy space magic, but the gist of it, you know, was that humanity's adaptability and biodiversity made them the best candidates for making a human mm-hmm. Reaper. And now we see that the Reapers are wanting to take out human biotics and a key R&D facility for developing more human biotic soldiers or human biotic whatevers. I think this lends like even more evidence onto the pile of like, and I know a lot of people hate this, but I think it lends more evidence onto that pile of that in the Mass Effect original trilogy, humanity is special. You know what I mean?
I do, and I agree. There is something about the humans that the Reapers are especially focused on. And I don't even know if it's necessarily that they want to kill all the biotic children or have them be harvested, indoctrinated, because human biotics are extremely powerful. And if you can have them be indoctrinated, that's even better, rather than having them killed off.
Oh, that's a great point, that they would be even more useful tools. I didn't even consider that. Yeah, I mean, look at how useful Paul is to them, and he doesn't have biotics.
Exactly. The Reapers give him biotics, and they're able to give him very powerful biotics. But if you take a human who is already biotically gifted, like these children, who are already at a high level, and then indoctrinate them and push them even further, that's, you know, talk about the biotic god level. That's what these children would then become. But of course, the Reapers are thinking, Reaperson, Grayson, is thinking about Kaylee, and that leads to thoughts of the Ascension Project, which then leads us to one of the most disturbing thought processes for a human listener. I was thoroughly creeped out about the way that they did this. The Reapers start going through Grayson's mind like he is a computer. Not a thought process of I am going from one thing to another, but literally pulling data and almost cataloging info sheets, not memories and feelings. They look at things in such a detached, clinical mindset. They are aware of the emotions of affection and trust and admiration that Grayson has towards the people involved in the project, but the Reapers don't feel them. Grayson is absolutely terrified of the Reapers using the information he has on the Ascension Project and of Jillian.
So they're data mining his brain, basically. Mm-hmm. And at this point, they're not interested in the emotions, like you said, but they're basically going through all of the information that might be relevant that he has thus far witnessed and pulling the right intelligence reports that they want to lead to an outcome that they want. I find this particularly ironic because Grayson, when he was working for Cerberus, was an intelligence operative, a field operative at that, but still worked in, you know, clandestine intelligence. And now look at what's happening to him.
Mm-hmm. And I think the reason that it weirded me out so much is that it felt like I was reading a database entry. Like I was reading it, that it was a codex entry being read to me. And that's not how people think. That's the way that we ingest information, is by having it all logically laid out. But then we attach our own feelings. We may reword it so that way it's spoken more in our own voice. But if I learn a piece of information, I'm going to absorb that and then restructure it for the way that I think. This was just straight read the codex entry.
This is a good reminder of the machine side of the Reapers, mm-hmm. the machine side of the synthetic organic intelligence that they are.
Oh, and that machine takes over during this whole time frame. They are in complete control, and Reaperson then steals another ship off of Omega. Another theft happens and heads directly for Grissom Academy to gather all the data on the entire project.
So Paul is losing just more and more and more control.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he does not really have any form of control. He can't, even though he sees Kylang, or I don't know if he recognizes, no, he sees Kylang, he sees Anderson, he sees Kaylee, but he has absolutely no control over what's going on. Thankfully, Anderson and Kaylee were able to escape the fray. But I think we can get to that after the mid break.
Yes, we can. All right, here we go.
Look, if you're still buying weed from some guy named Trevor in a parking lot, you're doing it wrong. Mood.com delivers legal THC products straight to your door. Gummies, vapes, flower, the good stuff. No sketchy DMs, no med card. Just add to cart, check out, and boom, it's at your doorstep. It's legal in all 50 states thanks to the Farm Bill, and Mood's products actually work. Seriously, this isn't gas station garbage. It's small batch, lab tested, real results. Go to mood.com, use code FIRST20 for 20% off, and never run dry again. That's mood.com. Go get lit, legally.
We have beef, we have bacon, we have beer. The foods of my people.
Young men have funny ideas of what Asari are like. I blame the extranet and computer games.
Rex?
Shepherd.
Grunt?
Shepherd.
Rex? Grunt?
All right, here we are in the middle of the show where we read out your five-star reviews that you can leave on Apple Podcasts or Audible or most places that you would catch your podcasts. But we also have a couple of Spotify comments to read today. One of them from Haku X Tamari. Hopefully I said that right. It says, as someone who loves all but two of the Mass Effect books, so glad to see Paul get more focus and hearing more context and experience about how addiction and how it affected him really makes me love them more. Can't wait to hear more. And as the biggest Kasumi simp, wait for her episode. That's right. Yeah, we do still definitely have to get to Kasumi episode. We also have one from Regretted Coin 22, who says, what an unfortunate continuation of Paul Grayson's story. I can't wait to hear the ending of it, and hopefully it has a better end to it than the cliffhanger you left us all with. That was last week. So,
we will have an ending to Grayson's story. Whether or not it will be enjoyable is a completely different topic.
Yeah, and we'll get to that in the second half. But Genesis, it looks like you've got a voice line for me.
I do.
All right. Let me go ahead and pull that one up. The file name is just called Panic Attack at the Disco? Uh-huh. No, I'm kidding.
It is very much at the disco. Go.
What was that?
Probably debris. Don't have a panic attack. I'll protect you.
All right. I know that music. That was definitely Mass Effect 1. That was so 80s sci-fi, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, like really hard, not hard sci-fi. You know what I'm talking about, though. Like the retro sci-fi. Anyway. Okay, I need to hear that one more time. One more time.
What was that?
Probably debris. Don't have a panic attack. I'll protect you.
This is Rex and Garrus on board the MSV. It's not the MSV Kowloon, is it? It's the MSV something in one of those, like, you know, freighters that you board. And they had all these boxes that formed like basically like a small maze that you got to navigate through. I can't remember exactly which one. I hope I'm on the money there. Am I right?
It is Mass Effect 1. It is Rex and Garrus. But this is actually when the Rachni start to show up and they create all of the ruckus. And then they're like, what was that?
It's in the vents. Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. That was a good one. Yeah, you stumped me on that one. That's good. All right. Well, we do also have to shout out our Tier 5 patrons. Butts. Unfortunate Benefactor, William, Superfly 440, Redrobot, Lieutenant Tosino, Kira C, and Ed Boy. Thank you all so much for your continued gracious support of the show. And let's get back to the rest of it.
After time adrift among open stars, along tides of light and through shoals of dust, I will return to where I began.
Salarian reproduction different. Very little sex drive. If intended to try human, would try you.
Ow, my pancreas.
All right, so Genesis, last we left off, Paul Reaperson had committed Grand Theft Auto yet again and stolen a ship to get off Omega, but this time there was no Paul left to wrangle the Reapers back, and so the ship is headed toward Grissom Academy.
Yeah, it does not get better. On the way to Grissom Academy, the Reapers show another display of control by having Grayson create an advanced virus software. It's good enough to actually disable the comms on the entire Academy station. And this allows him to fly directly up to the station and expertly lie his way onto the dock.
So he just, like, creates an advanced virus, like computer virus, out of nowhere?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, the Reapers have the intelligence to do it. Grayson wouldn't have any clue on how to do it. But the Reapers are just like, do this, and it's done.
I am Leet Haxor. It's a super old reference, but yeah.
But I got you. I got you. And yeah. And then the way that the Reapers are so scary and how easily they can pull likely stories and information that would be believable. You know, the Reaperson has to say, Kaylee said to meet her here. And, oh, but why are you driving this weird ship? Well, it's because I'm testing a ship for a business merger. And why are you only wearing a sheet? Well, I have a really bad cold, so I'm wearing a sheet. And it's a sheet to cover the implants? Seriously? That guard was way too trusting, right? I just don't understand this one. Okay, Kaylee said to meet here. Yeah, that's plausible. Because everybody on the base knows that Kaylee and Grayson are friends, and Grayson was a former parent to a former student. And testing a new ship for a business merger, that one, it makes sense. Of course people can fly different ships. But Grayson has to cover up his implants somehow. All these things that are growing outside of his body. So the Reapers have him wrap a sheet around him. And he just tells the dock guard that he has a really bad cold.
This part is actually pretty funny because the Reapers would have never had to deal, well, they would when they were individuals in organic life, but as Reapers, they have never had to deal with a cold and certainly never had to explain away a cold.
Right.
So this is like so far out of their depth. And this is also a situation in which Paul would have never found himself in real life, wearing a sheet out in pub. Well, we're not going to go there. He did work for Cerberus, but maybe that was the joke there, and I'm just now getting it. But Paul would have never found himself wearing a bed sheet because he had a cold and then had to, like, explain that. Anyway, so the Reapers can't data mine his brain for the right excuse here. And they can't draw on their own experience for the right excuse here.
Yeah, but at least they came up with something apparently semi-believable because the dock guard let him in and was like, oh, I'm sorry, man. I hope you feel better soon.
That's Skyrim NPC level. That's must have been the wind.
Now, this blind trust, unfortunately, it ends up getting all the guards killed by the Reaperson. And they then hack in to the archives and transmit all data back to the Reapers.
Oh, crap. .png.
Now, Grayson is mentally assailed by that much data being absorbed and redistributed across deep space.
The numbers, Mason. The numbers. What do they mean? Sorry, go ahead. I had to.
No, I mean, it is all the data. I mean, we talk about how we have to have it's the quantum...
quantum entanglement communicator?
He is one in this moment.
Yeah.
And that's insane. And so it totally makes sense about why he's very distracted during this transmission and why it takes a lot out of him mentally.
I can just imagine him, like, literally having a seizure from this.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, you can picture it exactly. It's going to be the guy standing in front of a computer console, head thrown back, and just, you know, very sci-fi moment. And it's during this transmission that he is attacked by Anderson. And Anderson made it to the station with Kaylee and Kai Lang. Because the three of them are working together right now.
Yeah, there's a whole lot that goes into that that is not related to Paul. And for everyone curious, I promise we'll get to that. We'll have our own separate series of episodes on Kai Lang.
I think Kai Lang, he doesn't deserve shit, but he at least deserves some Lorecast episodes to explain why he doesn't deserve anything.
If we did not cover Kai Lang, then I suppose we would just not have a leg to stand on, calling us a Lorecast.
Yeah.
Okay.
During this attack from Anderson, the body, Grayson's body, is starting to falter. And he has been forced to sleep by the Reapers, or at the very least, unconscious, his own mind shoved so far back into a corner, he's not even aware of what his body is doing. But if I recall correctly, they don't eat or drink or do any human functions since the initial imprisonment on the Turian station.
That's right. Do you mean the Cerberus station?
Yes.
Yeah, so when he was prisoner and he was basically, now I'm pulling from the deep recesses of my memory here, the food that he was fed was basically just paste, right?
It was like little MRE packs and some water things, yeah. It wasn't good food, but it was nutrition necessary.
So he's been existing on like no sleep, no food, just red sand and rage.
Mm-hmm. And indoctrination this whole time.
Yeah, wow.
The Reapers realize that they cannot keep their avatar functioning for much longer. And as Grayson's biotic abilities begin to weaken, his advanced speed and strength are slowed back down to human standards, and this is when he is forced to fight Anderson from cover. Now, Kaylee is on board, and when she finally finds where Grayson and Anderson are, Grayson biotically pushes and abducts Kaylee once Anderson is disoriented.
Oh, hell.
Not killing him. Now, in a moment of pure will, Grayson tells the Reapers not to kill Kaylee because of how important she is to the Ascension program, and how much information she knows beyond what is in the files. He mentally yells, "Save, too important to Ascension."
Wow, big brain move.
Only brain move left.
Galactic brain. this is a great appeal to their own desires, since, you know, we were talking a little bit about it earlier that the indoctrination is a two-way street. We get to see this a little bit, but on the other end, with Grayson having the Reapers in his head, that he now understands what they want. Mm-hmm. That's a big deal, because previously Grayson did not really even know about the Reapers, right?
No, Grayson didn't know anything about them until he was fully indoctrinated and was starting to understand what was going on. And then that knowledge flooded him.
Right. So he has learned from his own indoctrination the motives, at least in this context, of what the Reapers mm-hmm. want. And now he's manipulating and using that against them to save Kaylee.
Yeah. And so to me, it's like, okay, yeah, he obviously truly cares about Kaylee if he's going to use the last of his mental willpower to save her. And the Reapers actually listen. Now, they start to continue to walk together, trying to get Kaylee to leave the ship with Grayson. And some part of his original self still manifests itself as the Reapers have Grayson explain to Kaylee their views. So we've got a little bit of both sides trying to tell the story about why the Reapers are amazing, why we should start following them, because Grayson is now believing this on his own. They have made him believe, just like we hear from the Elusive Man, just like we hear from Saren. It's them talking and saying, this is why we should follow them.
Right. This is the join us conversation.
Mm-hmm. And she kind of starts to fall for it. You know, he still struggles to retain control, but Kaylee starts to fall under the Reaper's spell, because not only are they pushing indoctrination, but they can be very charismatic, and they, well, not charismatic, but they know what lies to tell. They know what words to use in order to bring people onto their cause. And it would have worked until a meddling kid came by. Nick Donahue, one of the students directly under Kaylee, attacks them with a biotic wave that sends them sprawling. There are a lot more reasons why it's Nick specifically, but you gotta read the books to understand the full story about why Nick was there. Reaperson recovers from this mental biotic wave and shoots Nick. This is like a 17-year-old kid maybe at this point, so I feel bad for the kid.
I think he's 15. I think he's 15 or 16.
Okay. And Grayson is about to kill Kai Lang when Anderson arrives and is able to take Grayson down with a shotgun.
Damn.
Yeah. His body spent. The Reapers release their control at last. He smiles up at Kaylee, who comes over to him, and they spend the last few moments together. And then Kai Lang unceremoniously puts two bullets into his skull.
This fucking guy. Right. Day Zero here in chat says, if only Anderson had waited 5 seconds. Yeah, seriously, Anderson could have waited 5 seconds. I know he really wanted to kill Grayson, but if he could have waited 5 seconds, then technically Grayson would have saved Thane.
Oh, yeah.
And the Salarian counselor.
Yeah, they would have.
Oh. Possibly Miranda, too, depending on what you chose in your story.
Yeah.
Yeah. So.
But yeah, that is pretty much the ending to Grayson's story. Anderson declared his intent to study Grayson's remains and asked Kaylee to join his research team. And this is finally the moment where Kaylee and Anderson share a, quote, on-screen kiss.
Mm.
It's in the book. It's there.
Mm. Splattered brains. Take me now.
No, this is later. It's not okay, in the moment. All right.
Well, we were just immediately following it up after Kai Lang, you know, like, oh, nice moment you're having there, Kaylee and Grayson. Anyway, pow. Like, so.
They take his body back to the Citadel, and this is where Anderson is like, I'd like to study Grayson's remains and everything like that to learn about Reaper tech. And that back in the calm times is where they share a kiss.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So, Grayson is gone. But there is a contentious fourth chapter to his story, kind of. And I'm couching this because I'm talking about Mass Effect Deception, right? We were gonna bring this up. I'll let you take the lead here.
Yeah. Okay. So we do have a little bit more information about Grayson after his death. In Mass Effect Deception, Anderson and Kaylee bring his body with them to the Citadel to show the Citadel Council as evidence of Reaper involvement in the attack on the Grissom Academy. But as we know, the Council remains unconvinced and believed that as alien and disturbing as Grayson's mutations are, an organization like Cerberus could be just as capable of producing such technology. Yes, I used a counselor voice on that one.
Yeah, you nailed it with that one. And basically they're stonewalling, which doesn't take a lot of imagination to write. Sorry. It's just that there's so many lore inconsistencies with Mass Effect Deception that it is it's not widely regarded as canon.
Yeah.
And I'm not addressing the council part specifically. I'm sure that they would remain unconvinced had that part been in the game or in the previous book. But basically everything we get about Grayson and his daughter Jillian in Mass Effect Deception is kind of like just take it with a grain of salt. Like if you are going to read that, because it's essentially I don't want to crap on someone's work, right? Because it's a lot of work that this author put together in making the book, but there's so many inconsistencies and there's so many like bad lore problems that you have to think that the author may not have even played Mass Effect. And so I don't know. I'm definitely of the camp that I don't believe Mass Effect Deception is canon. I know that at one point there was BioWare had basically consulted with the author and said there are a lot of inconsistencies. And I'm pretty sure the author said that they were going to put out a revised version, right? And that one never came.
Yeah. And I think that we can definitely go into Deception further down the road when we do our episodes on Jillian, because Jillian is a key player in Deception, and so we'll have to talk about it a lot when we get to there. The council also said, getting back to Grayson in Deception, is the fact that Grayson was once a member of Cerberus is further proof to the council that only Cerberus was involved and not the Reapers, of course. And after learning of Anderson's and Kaylee's presentation to the council, the elusive man orders Kai Lang to retrieve Grayson's body because now he wants it to study the after effects of what happened.
Of course. Yeah.
I also wanted to include this portion of it because in our episode 1 on Grayson, we said, oh, is he even mentioned in Mass Effect 3? And we're like, no, I don't think so. But there's actually quite a bit. And so I wanted to go over the 3 times he is mentioned. He is, of course, mentioned by Admiral Anderson when Shepard asks him about Kai Lang. So Anderson will talk about Grayson when talking about Kai Lang, which you should do, definitely, in order to get this next reference of Grayson on Horizon, because he's mentioned by Henry Lawson in an audio log. So it's a very quick little audio log, but it does mention Grayson by name. And then again, the 3rd time during the final assault on Cerberus's headquarters, Shepard finds video logs detailing Grayson's fate and stating that the Reaper implants within him proved useful in adapting the technology for Cerberus's forces. And they are the reason that we have the Reaperized Cerberus forces in Mass Effect 3.
Yikes. Yeah, thank you for issuing that correction, because we did leave that out in part 1 of Paul's story, and it occurred to me shortly after we actually recorded that episode, because I remembered those video logs in the final fight at Cerberus headquarters. I think that's also where we learned that Edie was that rogue VI on the moon, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, or that was her before she was an AI. So, yeah, that's a crazy tie-in in the game that it's basically just like, oh yeah, Paul Grayson, this guy that Drew Karpyshyn created for the books, he was the prototype for all of the Reaperfied Cerberus troops, and essentially the prototype for the extra implants that the Elusive Man gets put in himself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so it's a crazy way that all the lore is intertwined and works together, and that's one of my favorite things about trilogies and series like this, is where you get external media that follows back and gets pulled back in, and then you get these little, what feel like little Easter egg moments, because now the next time that we get to Mass Effect 3, we're going to be able to find these moments and be like, I know exactly who they're talking about. And that just makes the game feel even more special when you get every reference as you're going through for the second, third, 27th playthrough.
Yeah, cue the Leonardo DiCaprio meme, like, you know.
Yeah.
So, all right. So my final thoughts on Grayson, this is going to be our final Paul Grayson episode. But basically, I think he has one of the best redemption arcs in the whole series, because he starts as this compromised agent who is battling addiction, and he's rationalizing his service to a human supremacist organization, Cerberus, but then his like paternal instincts kick in and they start to fuel a resistance within him. A gradual rejection of Cerberus's methods, and then eventually their ideology. I think you can take it one step further from that. In Mass Effect Ascension, Grayson resists out of love for Jillian. In Retribution, the book we're talking about today, and last week, Paul resists out of principle. So he goes from resisting Cerberus's influence and then the Reaper's influence, first out of love and then out of principle, even under indoctrination and even while being forcibly dosed with red sand. So in my opinion, his behavior, it's this tragic but heroic transformation from reluctant participant in evil to a man who sacrifices everything to oppose it.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about in part two with his heavy on the addiction conversation was that he got sober for external reasons. And, you know, it was like, stay sober for Kaylee, stay sober for Jillian, stay sober to be alert and like on my toes at all times, and able to run if I have to. And then I also see that when it comes to why he was rejecting Cerberus. In the beginning, it was, I'm now rejecting Cerberus because of my external reasons. I'm rejecting Cerberus because of Kaylee, because of Jillian, because I want to be free and on my own and away from this. And then in Retribution, his resistance is now internal reasons. And his rejection of everything is due to internal reasons. He no longer wants to be a part of this organization. He no longer subscribes to the Elusive Man's rhetoric. He no longer wants to be a part of that. He, you know, was surrounded by aliens that he actually cared about and was building relationships with. And so he no longer believed in this humanity first. And so that was now internalized. And so I truly do believe that if Kai Lang, the Elusive Man, none of this indoctrination stuff happened, I think that Grayson could have stayed sober and could have at some point met back up with Jillian down the road and just kind of gotten out of the game.
You know, and that's the other part that we failed to mention like 10, 15 minutes ago. When we're talking about Grayson giving the last vestige of his mind to save Kaylee is that it was probably not just about him caring for Kaylee, but also because Kaylee knew far more about the Corian expedition that Jillian was on, because mm-hmm. that's how Paul was getting his updates about Jillian. He was video calling Kaylee every couple weeks for the past 3 years and asking, you know, you heard anything from the Corians or Hindle about mm-hmm. how Jillian's doing? And so there was that, I'm just kind of headcanoning this. In Paul's final moments, he probably remembered Jillian, and it gave him that kind of anime-like moment of like a, you know, go out fighting kind of approach.
Because if Kaylee were to be indoctrinated in that moment, he knew that would lead her, that would lead the Reaper straight to Jillian. Because, yeah, okay, the Corian expedition is heading out into deep space, is heading out far away. Well, where do we think the Reapers are? It'd be very easy for them to, you know, make their way over there or send another ship that's closer to them out there. There's saving Kaylee meant saving Jillian. And that's what he did in the end.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. Well, what a character. So I think that wraps it up for Paul Grayson. Tell us what you think. You can leave a comment on YouTube, on Spotify, Apple, whatever you like. But we have our patrons to talk to next week. And I don't believe that they have chosen a topic for the end of October yet. But that will be a fun discussion, as it always is. We also started something recently on the Mass Effect Lorecast Twitch, Genesis, that I think we ought to tell everyone about. We were talking about this for quite a while, months, I think, that we wanted to start a shared playthrough of the Mass Effect trilogy. And so last week, we created Sharon Shepard, as in mm-hmm. sharing. Sharon Karen Shepard, as in sharing is caring. So basically, you started the playthrough. We kind of like went back and forth during character creation, making someone look absolutely off the wall, but not bad. like, you know what I mean? Like, honestly, I could probably see this person walking around downtown Portland. So this is going to be really fun. You had 2 hours to play last week. I'm going to have 2 hours to play this week. And we are both on the stream with the other person who's not playing, just kind of witnessing everything and providing some color commentary. And the most fun part of this, I think, is going to come from decisions that you make that I would definitely not make, and vice versa.
Mm-hmm. The fact that I went all 3 points into not charm, but the other side of the coin.
Intimidate.
Yes, intimidate. Because I was like, I need the renegade score in order to get the good weapons. At least we are both loot goblins and we'll do whatever it takes to get every item.
I will be getting that Mass Effect 1 Colossus 10 armor, no matter what. Or no, I guess it would have to be Colossus 5, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because it's not New Game Plus. You can only go to 5.
Yeah. I used to play with a mod that just put all 10 ranks of everything in there in the first go through anyway. But anyway, that we're doing on Thursday nights, 7 p.m. Pacific, right? At 10 p.m. Eastern on Thursday nights. Go ahead and follow us on the Mass Effect Lorecast Twitch. We're also affiliates now. So that's fun. So Genesis and I are going to be huddling about getting some custom Mass Effect Lorecast emotes, other cool stuff like that. And Genesis, you got anything else going on until next week?
I've got my two other shows that I do, the Two Girls, One Ship podcast, all about video game romances, and the Cyberpunk Lorecast, talking everything cyberpunk.
All right. Both of them excellent shows. I am also picking back up my streaming on my personal account, N7 Legend, on Twitch. I have been streaming a bunch of different games lately. I was streaming Morrowind, Baldur's Gate 3, Squirrel with a Gun. That was fun. It's pretty self-explanatory. You play as a squirrel with a gun. And I was also streaming, oh man, what was the other? There was one more, I can't remember. Anyway, I have been gifted very graciously by a friend of mine, Borderlands 4. And so this is going to be my first Borderlands playthrough, and I'm going to do it all on stream. So I can't wait. I've heard pretty great things from friends of mine about the Borderlands series. So I'm very excited to start this. I think I could use like the kind of zany humor that I've heard Borderlands has. So looking forward to that. If you're interested in seeing that, go follow me on Twitch at N7 Legend. But I think that's all we got for this week, Spectres. So until next time, we should go. Thanks for listening to the Mass Effect Lorecast. Reach out to us on Blue Sky, Twitter, Discord, Patreon, or email us at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Join us next week for more lore. Same space, same time. Or check out our live streams at twitch.tv/masseffectlorecast.